Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil. Bellerín, qué golazo.
Magnífico.
Gol. Qué golazo de Bellerín. Gol del Arsenal. Gran gol de Bellerín, 1-0.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
The Arscast Extra today brought to you in association with Audible.com. You can get a 30-day free trial and a free audiobook download by going to audibletrial.com/Arscast. We'll give you more details on that later on. So, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, not too bad. How about yourself?
I'm also all right. You know, nothing spectacular one way or the other.
Middle of the road.
Yes, a little bit middle of the road. But hey, there you go.
Safe place to be. You're not going to veer off it.
No, true. But you could hit that thing that's in the middle of the road.
Yeah, they're separating the lanes or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about roads. You might remember hearing about my driving test, what happened with that. So this is a sore subject for me.
You failed it, right?
I failed it for speeding.
You were speeding, like, how fast were you going?
Quite fast. If anything, I think that demonstrates confidence and should be rewarded. But alas, I have subsequently passed it after really charming the instructor. I basically found out he was a musician and sort of talked to him about that for quite a long time. And I don't think he really paid attention to what I was doing. By the end, he was sort of giving me tips. But it's still an area where, you know, I have difficulties. Failing for speeding, I think, is pretty impressive.
Particularly in front of a kindergarten, you know.
Exactly, yeah. Well, what can I say? That kid looked at me funny. I had no choice.
Yeah, well, he was asking for it. Fair enough. Okay, well, look, will we discuss football?
Yeah, why not? I suppose we should.
We should, shouldn't we? Disappointing result last night against Swansea. It feels quite familiar. You know, we've been here before where we've dominated a game in terms of chances and shots on goal and then conceded to the first one, which was very much the case. Swansea's first attempt on target, well, their first shot of the second half was in the 87th minute and in it went, so he didn't have much time to recover. We normally, in fairness, concede a bit earlier than that, giving ourselves more time to build up a momentum, a crescendo, where, you know, a lot of the time we have sort of got a late equaliser, but wasn't to be.
No, it wasn't. I mean, did you see it coming? Did you think, oh, there's a chance we'll get caught here?
I guess you always have that in the back of your mind, but on the balance of the game, I didn't really, particularly the second half, because Swansea had been pushed back. I mean, we were camped in their half for the majority of the second half. You know, I guess there's always a danger when you're pushing and really pushing for a goal that you might get caught on the break, but it wasn't even the classic counter-attack or anything like that. So I was a little bit surprised by it. But at the same time, as I said on the blog, there's a familiarity to it that makes you go, oh, yeah, this thing again.
Are Swansea a bit of a bogey team for us, or is that just my imagination? I feel like they always give us real trouble.
Well, yeah, they have. I mean, they beat us earlier in the season. Last season, they've beaten us twice now this season. Last season, there was a game where, was it Flamini scored an own goal in the last minute? He kind of bundled it in off his own shin after we'd gone ahead, and that was a 2-2 draw. I mean, I think we've beaten them a few times at their place, but, you know, I think people went into this game expecting Swansea to kind of be on their holidays, and that was never going to be the case because they still have something to play for. They've got European football on the horizon. They could qualify for the Europa League, and I think, you know, they've got a young manager who is determined to show that he can mix it in the Premier League, and he's done that against Manchester United. They beat United twice this season. He's beaten Arsene Wenger twice this season. And, you know, they had a very obvious game plan from the start. I think they executed it pretty well in the sense that not too many of the chances we had were what you'd call clear-cut. But at the same time, you know, they... I don't know what I'm talking about. I just... it's just a disappointing result. But I think it has more to do with us than it has to do with Swansea.
Right.
If that makes sense.
In what respect, where do you think we fell down as opposed to how well we've done in recent weeks?
I think basically it was the finishing, to be honest. There was a real lack of conviction, wasn't there, in some of the shooting, the positions that we got ourselves into. Even that free kick in the first half with Mesut Ozil, you know, he hit Mertesacker rather than curling it around the wall and into the net like he was supposed to.
Yeah, the one that sticks out, I think you mentioned in your blog, was the Alexis Sanchez, Theo Walcott double chance, as it were.
Yeah.
Great pass from Ramsey. Alexis took it down inside the penalty area. You put your house on him to score, really. But once he missed, it came back to Walcott, and you thought, I think redemption would be a bit of a strong word, but you thought this was a real chance for Walcott to kind of make his mark. You know, Arsene had talked him up all week, the golden period for a striker. He's just entering it. And yet he really didn't deliver, did he? I mean, it was a very, very tame finish on the rebound.
Yeah, it was. I mean, having looked at it again, I think probably Alexis's miss is worse.
Right.
Because he only has Fabianski to beat.
But Andrew, what about the narrative? Alexis is brilliant and Walcott's rubbish. What are you talking about?
Well, you know, Alexis at least has got the backup of 24 goals this season.
Yeah.
To the point where you can sort of say, you know, okay, well, we can forgive him one or two. Whereas Walcott, as you make the point, he's coming back into the team looking to make an impact or being asked by the manager to make an impact, and, you know, he really didn't.
Mm.
But of the two chances, I think the Alexis one was the easiest because all he had to do was just tuck the ball in at the near post. You know, a finish we've seen from him quite a few times this season where he goes near post. There was all the space in the world there. Instead, he hit it straight at Fabianski. The ball came out, and I think Walcott sort of had two players charging in on him, which isn't to say that Walcott's effort wasn't anything other than tame, like you say, but I do think it was probably a little more difficult than the one Alexis missed. And it's disappointing because, you know, in a tight game like that, you know, that's really the difference. You know, I know a lot of people sort of said we got it tactically wrong last night and what have you. I'm not sure that's the case. I mean, I think we're just looking at really fine margins between 3 points and no points. You know, had that goal gone in, we would have been talking about how, you know, we basically battered them into submission in that second half with the amount of shots we had, with the amount of possession we had, where that possession was, how long we spent camped in their half. We would have been, you know, giving huge credit to the team for breaking down a very stubborn resistance. So ultimately, I think the failure is more individual than any sort of collective issue with tactics. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I mean, what about the team selection? We saw the same 11 named for the fifth consecutive game, first time since 1994. Do you think there's any argument that in doing that, Swansea knew exactly what they were going to get? You know, they were able to prepare a plan based very specifically on the team that we would put out. Do you think there's any kind of negative impact to that? Do you think rotation helps spring a surprise here and there?
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about this, didn't we, the other week, the need to try and find balance between a team that's functioning very well, is confident, full of belief, and one that perhaps lets their standard slip, even by 1 or 2%. Not consciously, but subconsciously, a little complacent, perhaps. You know, you saw with the first half performance that there wasn't a great deal of urgency, and that can happen with first halves. But, you know, you'd like to think that perhaps, you know, those players could have done a bit more in that first half to make life more difficult for Swansea. I mean, I think that is a difficult choice because had he changed it, people would be saying, well, why are you changing a winning side?
True.
And if you don't change it immediately, the question becomes, why haven't you changed it? Because we need a bit more rotation. But again, it was interesting, wasn't it, that he brought Wilshere on to the right-hand side of midfield, put Walcott on as a central striker. You know, I'm not quite sure that worked. I mean, do you think, for example, if he'd had Danny Welbeck on the bench last night, he would have brought on Welbeck ahead of Walcott?
I think so. And I actually think that it's a bit of an issue for us that Welbeck's not available at the moment, because for all the talk about Theo being a striker, I'm not convinced that he's a great option in that centre-forward role. I know Welbeck's not been prolific of late, but he does at least know the position. And we've got we've got Podolski, Campbell, Sanogo and Akpom all away from the club at present.
I think Akpom is back.
Oh, is he actually back?
I think so, because the season's over, isn't it, in the Championship?
Of course it is. It'd be weird if he was hanging around Nottingham.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think we lack a sort of a recognised striker option at present. And I'm not sure about this Walcott thing. I mean, he's such a different player to Giroud. It feels like you're asking quite a lot of the team to suddenly adapt to all right, Mr. Popular.
Yeah, sorry.
it feels like you're asking quite a lot to ask the team to adapt to a completely different kind of striker in that way.
Well, wasn't it weird as well that when Walcott came on, we immediately seemed to get beyond the fullbacks?
Crossing the ball,
and we had literally nobody to cross it to.
Very strange, that. I mean, what's really odd is that we've got almost a fully fit squad at our disposal, and yet when you looked at the substitutes bench, this might seem an odd thing to say, but I wasn't necessarily convinced there was anyone there who I trusted to change the pattern of the play or offer something different, you know?
Could I suggest that perhaps a Rosicki-type player or an Oxlade-Chamberlain in that kind of a game could be really valuable? Because, you know, when a team sits deep against you, and you're finding it hard to break them down, you're passing the ball across the pitch, looking for space, that sometimes you need the guy who will take the risk and try and burst between the lines a little bit. And that's a Rosicki trait. That's an Oxlade-Chamberlain trait. And again, you know, when we come back to the substitutions, regardless of how you want to dress them up, what we did was bring on two players and played them out of position, which is odd.
It is odd. It is odd, especially when, as I say, the squad is near full fitness. I think the two guys you mentioned would have been very helpful because they can both change the tempo of a match. You know, they've both got that half yard to go past somebody, that desire to run with the ball, and that can open up an opportunity and you know, change the dynamic of the match.
Mm.
So, yeah, that was a bit frustrating. What did you make of the decision to bring Giroud off? I mean, he'd had a bit of a kicking in the first half. Do you think that was a factor in that decision?
Maybe. I mean, I guess we don't know. I mean, that's the sort of information we don't know. If a player is struggling a little bit with an injury, and he seemed to really feel that when he got in the back in the first half. So maybe that was part of it, you know. But I think I just find it a bit odd that when you're looking for a goal, you take off a guy who gives you, you know, so many options in terms of a goal, both from an aerial perspective. He's good in the air. He's a decent poacher. He can bring others into play. You know, maybe the idea would be to give him a little bit more support or bring on Walcott on the right-hand side, even put Walcott up with him a little bit. You know, you could do that because of the way that that Swansea were playing. They weren't particularly expansive, so you could certainly have increased the options around him. He's our second highest scorer. His form has suffered a little bit in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, no goal in five for Giroud, actually. I think it is his last five appearances. Anything to that, or just...
Well, I mean, I think that happens. You know, Alexis went a period, didn't he, when he didn't score in 10 or 8 or 9 games. You know, it happens. But like you say, the issue is that we don't have the backup available when Welbeck is out injured. I thought it was a little bit strange, I have to say, to take him off.
Yeah, I mean, I would have, if assuming he was fine physically, I definitely would have left him on.
You know, particularly when it's late in a game and the momentum builds and you're looking to get players wide, you're looking to get your fullbacks wide, get some crosses in, you know, that's kind of where he thrives a little bit. So yeah, I found that decision a little bit odd, but maybe there was more to it than we know.
And what about the Swansea goal? I mean, you could have predicted the source. So Jefferson Montero, he terrorised us in the first game at Liberty Stadium, I think.
Yeah.
Was it him who put the cross in?
It was.
And then Gomis got above Monreal, just as he did at Liberty Stadium as well. So, yeah, should have seen it coming, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, well, I thought that was a bit unfortunate because I thought Monreal played really well. I thought he was, I thought he was one of our most aggressive and most determined players last night. Certainly he was trying to win the ball back high up the pitch to move us forward. You know, you might ask why one of the central defenders wasn't looking after Gomis. Mm-hmm. I mean, the cross, it happens. I think what we saw was a little bit of inexperience from Hector Bellerin, the same way that we saw inexperience from Callum Chambers, a learning curve for them, for both of them, you know, and I think it shows that perhaps pace isn't the only issue that young defenders have when they're playing a tricky player like Montero. I mean, he did get a few crosses in. We dealt with most of them. That one was, it felt a bit inevitable. And I'm not 100% sure that David Ospina covered himself in glory with the save. What did you make of his attempt to keep the ball out?
Well, what I thought watching it, first of all, watching it live, I had no idea that ball had gone in. Quite a great example of goal line technology, because I would never have called that in a million years.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure the officials would have done either. But I think it's the sort of thing where I feel like if Chesney had done it, he would have taken absolute pelters for it.
Yeah.
But it just so happens that at present, Ospina's kind of the man in favour, the man in possession of the shirt, and is a little bit more protected from that kind of criticism. I thought he should have done better, to be honest.
Yeah.
It was a good header, powerful header, downward header, but having got there, he should be keeping that out.
Yeah. Is it to do with just his arms are too short? I mean, could it not be something as fundamental as that he's 5'11", 6 foot at most, and that he just doesn't have the reach? That a taller goalkeeper would have had the fingertips on that a little bit sooner? Was there something, anything in his technique that you didn't...
I don't know. I mean, I'm not a goalkeeper. I know that Bob Wilson, who obviously... great Arsenal keeper and goalkeeping coach for a long time, has talked about the need for a 6 foot plus goalkeeper in the modern era, and Ospina's certainly not that, is he?
No, he's never going to be that.
Well, barring a miracle or some kind of corrective surgery, I mean, I lost an inch in height in my adult years for strategic reasons, but the chances of him gaining one or two or five, as we'd like, are slim. It's difficult because he hasn't done a lot wrong, has he, in his time in goal?
No, but you know, I have to say I remain somewhat unconvinced. You know, that's not to say he's not a good goalkeeper. I think he is a good goalkeeper. I just don't think he's a very good goalkeeper. And maybe that's where our sight should be, you know. We haven't lost many points this season due to our goalkeepers, either Chesney or Ospina. Really, you know, Chesney at Southampton, but apart from that, there weren't, like, many huge individual mistakes from either goalkeeper. So I'm not sure it's quite as big an issue as some people would say, but I just don't find myself convinced by him, or that the run that we're on at this moment, or were on, rather, that 10-game undefeated run had a huge amount to do with Ospina more than it did the team being more cohesive and attacking, if you get me.
Yeah, and the back four, of course. You know, the back four coming together as they have with Monreal and Bellerin in there. It's really difficult to work out to what degree it's down to Ospina or not. I agree with you in that I'm not quite convinced by him, and I think it's definitely a position where we could upgrade in the summer. As for last night, I think he'll be disappointed, but having performed relatively well, I don't think his place is under any immediate threat, I should say that. I don't think there's any chance of Chesney, you know, coming back in at Old Trafford.
No, that would be a big surprise, I have to say. But who knows? who knows? The manager is capable of surprises from time to time. But yeah, I mean, I guess it would depend on how culpable he sees, you know, the goalkeeper for that one. But he'll be watching the tapes, I'm sure. So look, overall, a disappointing result. You know, is it one of those that we can put down to just one of those nights that happens, or is it, you know, does it go back to fundamental flaws that we've failed to work out of our game? You know, how do you put this in context of the last couple of months?
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? Because along that good run that we've had a couple of close shaves. You know, I remember at Crystal Palace and QPR, you know, some nervy late moments. And to some extent, are you sort of just due a result like that? Is that just something that eventually is going to happen? You know?
Yeah.
How many games unbeaten were we? 10, was it? I think.
Yeah, 10.
9 wins.
You know, and people will say these are the games that you have to win if you want to be title contenders, if you want to be taken seriously as, you know, as somebody who can really compete for the championship. Is that a fair comment? Or, you know, do you have to accept that along the way you're going to have nights where things don't go right?
I think you do have to accept that. I think even the best teams have occasional slip-ups. And I do kind of feel like it was one of those things. We weren't quite at our level. We were punished very, very harshly for that. But I don't read too much into it. My only level of concern is just that it shows you what can happen in any one game. And I suppose with a cup final on the horizon,
yeah,
it's a bit of a reality check.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that Tim Sherwood will have been looking at that last night thinking, well, I mean, Tim Sherwood will obviously...
I don't have to be thinking much at all.
No, I mean, clearly as one of the best managers of all time, he will know already how he wants his team to play. But, I mean, would that not be something of a blueprint for him to look at ahead of the FA Cup final, that his team, if he gets them organised, gets them disciplined, denies us space in midfield, forces us narrow, you know, is that not the way to play against us? Because it is something that we have struggled with throughout this season and in previous seasons.
Yeah, I mean, like Swansea, they've got a lot of pace on the flanks. They've got a very powerful, slightly frightening centre-forward. I think Benteke in this kind of form can do an awful lot of damage.
Mm.
The one thing that you have to hope is that Sherwood always says he sends his teams out to play attacking football. He's almost Harry Redknapp-esque in that respect. And you have to hope that will get the better of him, because I think if he tries to go toe-to-toe with Arsenal, he'll come a cropper. If he employs a more strategic approach, as Swansea did last night, cut their cloth accordingly, then there'll be much more of a worry. So, yeah, let's hope tactics Tim doesn't delve too deeply into the tactics.
All right. Okay, what we'll do right now is take a short break. We'll come back with some of your questions in part two. Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra, brought to you this week in association with Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial by going to audibletrial.com/Arsecast. That's audibletrial.com/Arsecast. They have over 180,000 audiobooks and things that you can listen to there, so the choice is splendiferous, really. Anything you might want, go to audibletrial.com/Arsecast, sign up for your free trial, download your free audiobook, and it helps us buy sandwiches.
Delicious sandwiches.
Right. Time for some questions. Yeah, I'm going to let you go first, seeing as I'm a gentleman.
Very generous of you. Good, sir. Okay, let's have a little scroll through. I've lost the ability to speak at the optimum time. This question comes from Steve Moore. Steve Moore 4116. He asks, if fit, would you play the Welbeck back at Old Trafford card once again at the weekend in place of Giroud?
Yeah, I'd be tempted, actually, because we touched on Giroud's form being a little bit indifferent. Maybe, you know, just a game on the bench wouldn't hurt too much. Welbeck, obviously, would be fired up for this particular game. Does give us something a little bit different in the centre-forward position, a bit more pace. Why not? Why not try something a little bit different? But he's got to be 100% fit. We don't want to stick an 80% fit Welbeck on just for the sake of it. So,
To spook them.
Yeah, just, you know, there we go. Oh, no, this guy again. Where do we know him from? Oh, yeah.
But I think it'd be more that guy than this guy. Come on, Andrew.
Oh, for goodness sake. I missed that one. Yeah, I mean, why not? Why not? I mean, I think if a player goes five games without a goal, you're in a position where you go, well, eventually he's going to score. Sooner or later, he's going to get a goal. But maybe he just needs a little breather. Are there signs of Giroud looking a little bit tired, a little bit bit leggy, you know, where similar to perhaps last season when he played a lot of games and he has played a lot of football since he's come back from injury. So maybe there's just an element of fatigue there with him. So, yeah, why not? If he's fit, give him a bash, I say.
I think that there is an element of fatigue with Giroud, and I think, you know, he's in some very physical battles of late. He was up against three centre-halves at Hull. It was two at Swansea, but Jack Cork kept dropping in. It was effectively a three at times, narrow full-backs, and I do think he's just a bit tired. However, I am tempted to say if he's fit, play him, and I might like to see Welbeck on the right-hand side at Old Trafford. I know Aaron Ramsey's been doing a good job there, but I just wonder if this is a game where maybe someone with a bit more pace on that wide, you know, on the flank, might work to our benefit. I don't know.
So would that mean Ramsey on the bench or Cazorla on the bench?
Well, that's then the really difficult decision and the one that I don't think I could make. I just don't think Santi Cazorla's droppable at present, but that's where it gets tough, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is tough.
Squeezing in all those midfielders. Yeah, don't know. I genuinely can't answer that question. I mean, I can't find a reason to drop Santi Cazorla, given how excellent he's been and how important he's been to our form. But you'd imagine that Ramsey's stamina and physicality would be helpful. So
yeah.
Maybe I'm talking bollocks.
It wouldn't be the first time, but, it is a difficult one because... Yeah, I mean, there are issues, aren't there, when Ramsey plays on the right-hand side that we do become a bit narrow because his natural tendency is to drift infield. I don't know. I think he has to change it a little bit.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But I think he'll also be mindful of the fact that when he's got to kind of grind, not grind out a result, but when you're playing a big team, same way as when we played Chelsea, that he might feel that formation, that setup with Ramsey on the right provides the team with the best way of getting that balance. You know, is Ashley Young playing down the left-hand side?
He is, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so that's the... he's been quite dangerous.
I know. I thought we'd ever be saying that, talking about him as a threat.
Well, exactly. You know, these things happen with players, and he's clearly over the bird poo trauma. So maybe that's something he's got to be mindful of as well. Is Ramsey the best man to take on or to shackle Young down that side? I don't know. It's a difficult one. Difficult.
Possibly.
One.
It is interesting because, obviously, as you say, he's kept faith with that 11. For a long time now.
My feeling would be that if Welbeck is fit and available, that we would be better using him as a striker than somebody on the right hand side.
Okay. All right.
So if I had to put him in the team. Okay. All right. Good. All right. Here is a question from Connor Whelan, at Connor Whelan, I-R-E. Connor Whelan, R. That's his, that's his anger after his name, you see. But he wants you to discuss the set-piece delivery last night. The only time the ball cleared the first man, Fabianski caught it. Were you disappointed with the corners, the free kicks? Because they have been better in recent times.
They have. It was a bit disappointing, wasn't it? I mean, those tricky corner run-ups that we've talked about at the Emirates Stadium before, all those slopes hindering our players. It's just weird, isn't it? We're quite inconsistent with it. Even when you think we've solved it and we have a game where it looks a little bit better, it's almost like it's cumulative within a match. So if the first one is poor, it sort of builds from there, you know, it kind of disintegrates as the game wears on. And by the end, I sort of felt like, you know, why are we bothering at times?
Yeah.
It's a curious thing, all these incredibly technically gifted players struggling to take a set piece. And it is odd because there are times when it feels like we're over that hump. But last night was not one of those occasions.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you put it down to anything specific or...?
I don't know. It's so difficult, isn't it? Because you're trying to work it out from a technical point of view. Like, why can't they do it? And then they just don't do it.
Maybe they don't want to.
Could be it.
There's got some
but
sort
for
of weird...
What? For what reason?
I don't know.
Like, what's the point they're trying to make?
Yeah.
What's the wider issue here, man?
I don't know. They just... Maybe contrary to popular opinion, Arsene Wenger makes them practice corners all the time to the point that they hate corners so much that when they get them in a game, they're like, we'll show the manager. This will teach him for all those drills. Let's just hit it at the first defender.
Maybe this is part of a behind-the-scenes issue where they're campaigning for more lime pudding in the canteen. And they say, if you don't get us more lime pudding, we're going to take terrible corners.
Well, I heard that Steve Bould went to the manager and said, I think we should get more lime pudding. But the manager just completely ignored him.
He's a puddingist.
Well, that's it. Because apparently Borough Primorac doesn't like limes.
What's his citrus favourite?
He's more of like a sort of... To be honest, he's more of a rhubarb man.
Wow. You'd never would have thought that with him.
No, I know. No. And as you know, he's got the ear of Arsene, so they just keep dishing out rhubarb-based puddings at Colney.
For
the players
sake.
Are furious.
Absolutely. I mean, look, you need to mix it up a bit. A bit of passion fruit in there, some mango. But rhubarb, nobody ever won a title with rhubarb puddings.
Well, that's it. That's it. That was one of the first things, apparently, that Mourinho did when he came in at Chelsea, was he took all the rhubarb off the menu. Because they, like most professional footballers, were having rhubarb for every course of every meal. But he was quite an innovator, so he's like, I don't want to see it. If I see anyone just carrying rhubarb at the Chelsea training ground, they're out.
Yeah, they're out. I heard that he threatened to bring back Ashley Cole to shoot them if they had rhubarb.
Well, Juan Mata loved rhubarb. That was the thing. Like, and everyone's like, why isn't he playing Mata? But whenever you looked at the subs bench and Mata was sat there, he was always just nibbling on a bit of rhubarb.
Yeah.
Just like a little mouse, just holding it. And that apparently was one of the major issues in their relationship as well.
Well, there you go. Well, that explains the corner thing.
I think that does, yeah.
Yeah, so Conor Whelan's ire will be sated.
Assuaged for now.
All right.
Another question. This one's interesting, because we've had this question before, about 6 months ago. We answered it emphatically, but we might have cause for reconsideration.
Okay.
It's from Christos Christoforo. Just to take a moment for that name, because it's pretty swell. He says, is there any chance Carl Jenkinson still has an Arsenal future? Surely it's over for him. Interesting comments, weren't they, from Arsene Wenger?
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, the comments that he made about Jenkinson and Theo Walcott were pretty much the only thing, you know, he can say in public. Because the minute you say, well, there's no room for him, or I'm willing to let a player go, then, you know, you weaken your hand in the transfer market. On the other hand, you can see some sense to Jenkinson perhaps spending another year out on loan, that he's done well at West Ham, and you know, he seems to have developed a bit as a player. And maybe with Bellerin there, with Debuchy not getting any younger, obviously, another year on loan, and then you can make a final decision. So maybe there's a chink of light there for him, because he's talked about Chambers becoming a centre half. So that's one of the right back options out of the way. So maybe. I'd be surprised, but just maybe. I mean, what do you think?
I mean, I thought it was over for him. I thought it was a done deal. The emergence of Bellerin looked to have closed the door. But yeah, having seen those comments from Arsene Wenger, I mean, if they can convince the player to spend another season out on loan, which I don't think will be easy. Players don't really like being on loan, do they? They want the security of a permanent move and a sort of forward plan for their career. But if they can talk him into that, it'd be an unusually long-term piece of thinking from a football club and a player to go and spend 2 years away, develop, and then come back to challenge for a first-team place. You don't see that for a player of Jenkinson's age. You don't see that all too often.
Yeah, normally when a player is going out on loan, you know, at Jenkinson's age, having, I wouldn't say established himself in the first team, but having become a part of the first team squad, to then go out on loan normally suggests that the manager has made up his mind. But he's only 23 now. Mm. So, you know, it's not like he's, you know, he'll be 24 maybe when he comes back from another loan, 25. You know, it's not impossible. You know, when you think you buy Bakary Sagna at, what, 26? Whatever he was, 25. So, yeah, not impossible, but still unlikely, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting though for Debuchy, isn't it? I mean, he's almost in danger of kind of being sort of squeezed out of his Arsenal career before it's ever happened. Mm. He started really well, been incredibly unfortunate with injuries, and obviously Bellerin's sort of snatched his place. And it's difficult, you know, we talked about when Debuchy came back into contention how we thought Wenger would go with him, but I feel like, I don't know, after that slightly patchy performance against Reading and another injury setback, I feel like Bellerin's really cemented that spot for now anyway.
What would you do in the final few games? You know, would you keep faith with Bellerin, even though we saw last night there was an example of his inexperience with Montero? Maybe Debuchy wouldn't have stopped that cross either, but you know, when you're a manager, I guess your tendency is to go for experience. Debuchy played in the semi-final, for example.
Yeah.
And it wasn't necessarily a decision that worked out particularly well. And that's, you know, not to be critical of Debuchy. He's just playing his first game for 3 months or whatever it was. He ended up doing 120 minutes and looked pretty knackered. So that's another decision the manager has to make ahead of Wembley.
Yeah, I think my inclination would be to stick with Bellerin. I know that seems a bit risky potentially, but he's been on a roll, and I think his development's been one of the real highlights of the season. Maybe it's a bit too much too soon, but yeah. I don't know. Yeah, that would be my hunch. What about you?
It would depend if Debuchy can come back and play one of the final games, maybe.
He'd need some time under his belt, wouldn't he?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he would need to play against Sunderland and West Brom, probably. And then two games in a week, is that asking too much of him? He's got to play one of those final two games this season to be realistically considered for the cup final. I think it would be too much of a risk and also unfair to just throw him back in for the final.
Mm. I agree. Mm. Your question.
Oh, it's my turn, is it?
I believe so.
All right. Okay. Right. Here we go. All right. Here's one from Nick Angelo, at Nick Angelo. And he said, if Wenger and Mourinho swapped teams, who would win the title?
That's a good question, isn't it?
Mm.
You know the good questions, because I never really know how to answer them. that's the main criteria. Let's have a think. What would he have to play with at Arsenal? He'd have a pretty good team at his disposal, as would Arsene. That is really hard to say, because in some respects, the teams currently are kind of built in their managers' images.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you swapped those around, there'd be a bit of dysfunction there, but in some ways they'd also kind of even out some of those managers' flaws. Like, if you give Arsene Wenger the Chelsea back four, much like when he inherited the initial back four at Arsenal, he's got a fantastic defensive base to work from. If you give Jose Mourinho the Arsenal squad, I suspect this football might be a bit more attractive. Not that Chelsea haven't got good players, but just that, you know, a team with Sanji Cazorla and Mesut Ozil is bound to be entertaining.
Yeah.
Who would actually come out on top? I'm going to actually say that I think it would be Arsene Wenger with the Chelsea squad. I think you'd get that kind of 97-98, 2001-2002 effect of him coming into a setup with a fairly established defensive base and then being able to add unsurpassed attacking flair on top of that. And I think that with working with guys like Cesc Fabregas, Eden Hazard, Oscar, Willian, I think he could produce a really strong attacking team to complement that defensive base. And I think that would probably be enough. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that would be the winner, I have to say. You know, the experience that's in the Chelsea squad, as unseemly as it all is, you know, they have got this experience, a very solid back four and goalkeeper. And there is a huge amount of, you know, you've got that defensive midfielder there with Matic. And then ahead of that, you know, you're looking at Fabregas, Hazard, Diego Costa. Mm. You know, I think there would be enough attacking options in the Chelsea squad to keep Arsene Wenger happy. You know, they have played in a very functional way at times, a fairly unexciting way, as we know. But like you say, that's more down to the manager, to Mourinho, than it is to the type of player that they've got. So, yeah, I mean, I think Arsene Wenger would win the title with the Chelsea squad.
Yeah. Although it's sort of interesting because in part is that down to Mourinho? Do you know what I mean? Would he be inheriting Mourinho's defensive work? So is it truly an Arsene Wenger victory in itself?
Well, I mean, you know, George Graham won the first two titles for Arsene Wenger, etc. You know, I don't know. I mean, we're just being asked to judge it on a very superficial level, obviously, because it's a hypothetical question. So
is there some suggestion this is going to happen next season? That would be
I can't imagine.
What does Nick Angelo know? That's my question.
He looks like a guy who knows things.
Really?
Yeah, he's staring away into the distance there.
The future, you mean?
Well, I don't know. He's turned to... I'm just looking at his avatar. He's turned to the right. So if you were looking into the future, would you turn to the left or to the right? Like, which is your past?
I think left... Well, I would say left because I come from a culture where we read from left to right. So I associate the right with forward motion and forward thinking.
Yeah.
That's quite a sensible answer. It's quite a silly question.
Yeah, it really is. but yeah, I would be inclined also to look to the left as the past and to the right as to the future.
Sure.
If I was being that kind of weirdly, you know, symbolic about things. So Nick he's looking to the right. So I think he's looking to the future. And I think perhaps he could have come back from a time where he knows what's going to happen.
So he's from the future.
I'm saying that he is from the future. His real name could actually be John Connor.
Right.
And
that's
Nick, if this is the case, if your name is actually John Connor, please be aware that there's a kind of robot dude who's going to try and find you and kill the shit out of you. Mm. So, you know, maybe we've just fucked Nick here.
Take care, Nick. If that is your real name.
All the best.
Question.
Yes.
Yes. That's the format. I'm getting it slowly. Do you know what I mean?
It's only been a year and a half, yeah.
Yeah. But I think I've got the vibe of it now. Okay, right. I'm going to do this because two people have asked it. So Mitesh Khatri has asked it. And I've also had three emails from Peter Ellingbow about it. But I'll read Mitesh's question. He says, yesterday looked like the kind of game Podolski would have scored in with his Android super shot.
Android super shot?
Yeah. Should he return? And Peter's emails are of a similar theme, basically suggesting that Theo Walcott isn't necessarily a game-changing substitute, whereas Podolski, because of his ability to produce something out of nothing, could have been. Any thoughts on that at all?
Well, I'm not wholly convinced by this ability to produce something out of nothing argument. If you were to say to me, could Podolski have scored from the position Walcott was in yesterday? Certainly. Would he have been in that position? I'm not necessarily sure. I think there's probably been, during his Inter Milan sojourn, quite a lot of nothing out of which Podolski has produced nothing, given that he scored just one goal in his time there. So, I think, you can look at it and say, well, if he'd had that chance, then he would have buried it. I think he probably would have hit the ball a lot harder, would have had more chance of going in, but you can't say that he would necessarily have been in that position in the first place. I think his best goals have come from outside the area. So he wouldn't really have been there. I get the concern or the doubt over Walcott, because I would share those in the sense that, he had a great chance at Hull to come on and score a goal. He fluffed it. He had a great chance last night, didn't make the most of it. Maybe there is the need for somebody to be a bit more clinical around the box, but I'm not sure that Podolski is the guy. I'm really not sure that there's much more to him than just being able to cunt the ball really, really hard. And, if that's all it was, then he would be the best player in the world, right?
Yeah. That'd be quite a strange sport, though. But what I do agree with is it would be nice to have someone available within the squad with that kind of finishing prowess, only with a few more attributes. So, Arsene Wenger's talked about the need for 10 to 15 more goals in the squad, or maybe a player to step up and provide that, but it might be something he has to address come the summer.
Yeah.
Any more questions from you?
Do I have? Yes, I do. I've got one more question. This comes from Matt Horner.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, what the fuck, man?
Tell me about it.
Yeah.
I've got one.
Okay.
Scott Abraham. He says, would you rather... This is a return to a kind of an Askcast classic sort of question.
Right.
Would you rather fight 100 duck-sized horses? Picture that.
Yeah.
Or one horse-sized duck?
We've had this question. This is like...
Really?
We've done that question. It's an internet classic. Honestly, we have. There might have been a variation where it was like 100 duck-sized otters or one horse-sized dinosaur or something.
And is the answer always that you'd rather fight the one thing?
I don't know what the answer is. I guess it depends on what your skills are. Like, if you're one of those people that can fight a load of things at the one time, then...
What does this mean, that I'm now just reading out questions that we've already done?
Your history's repeating itself. I think that's what that is.
Help us, Nick Angelo. We're just going round and round in time. Just answering questions again and again, waiting for the Terminator to kill us.
Come on, Nick from the future. You should be able to sort this out. Okay, here's one.
All right.
This one comes from Robin Kent. At Robin Kent SF. Okay. And he wants to know, should players wear paper shirts? Refs could then spot shirt tugs in the box.
That's insane. Should they wear paper shirts?
Yeah, paper shirts. Because, if the minute a guy like pulls your shirt, it's ripped.
But it would rip constantly. It would rip if you ran fast enough.
Okay, well, maybe not quite paper, like, but... Yeah, just something that would be more obvious.
Maybe. I feel like...
I think he's onto something.
Do you?
Yeah.
But isn't it the case that there's always a little bit of shirt pulling and that doesn't necessarily constitute a foul?
Yeah. Yeah. And
wouldn't there just be a lot of men running around half naked all the time?
And the problem with that would be what?
I know, I'm not saying it is a problem. I'm just saying that it might become impractical.
Certainly, certainly.
It would certainly make it cheaper for the fans to get a replica.
Maybe you could wear layers. So, when your first layer is ripped, you just, like, shrug
it
off.
Pass the parcel?
Yeah, exactly.
And you get a goal when you get to them topless.
Yeah.
I mean, what? So you think this is a good idea, saying we should
I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm saying it's an idea.
Would their shorts be paper as well?
No. No.
Right, so you just hold them by the shorts then?
Well, they wouldn't wear shorts. They would wear miniskirts like Bucks Fizz in the Eurovision Song Contest.
That just rip off.
Yeah, they just rip off like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a very good idea, actually.
Hmm. I mean, could we do it in such a way, because you look at these Puma shirts, and they are essentially skin tight now. So in order to stop shirt pulling, could we not do those, like, just paint the players?
Like body
all
art,
the art. Yeah, body art. And all the players are painted red, the Arsenal players, put some white sleeves on them. And all the opposition players are painted in their colour. And that way you can't, the only way you can get hold of somebody is, like, reef them by the nipple. And that would be very obvious.
Do you not think that would lead to a significant rise in nippular injuries?
Possibly, but maybe that's something we're just going to have to contend with.
I can imagine Arsenal
to
being
bring the game into the future
struck down with all these nipple niggles. Has Chad Forsyth ever encountered anything like that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, would that then become a factor in whether you sign a player? Like, how grabbable are his nipples? Does he have
size.
Slightly inverted nipples, which would be very difficult to get hold of? Or does he have, like, those kind of bullety ones, you know, sticky out ones that, like, teats almost? Mm. Like, no, we can't sign him. He's just, his nipples are too long. It would be easy for defenders to get hold of them.
I think that would become a problem, yeah.
Mm.
It would be part of the stringent medical, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Nipple measurement.
Yeah.
It would affect your transfer fee and everything.
Well, that would be discriminatory as well, because there's not much you can do about your nipples. But it could lead to a rise in nipple cosmetic surgery.
That does exist, I believe.
Really?
I haven't looked into it, but I think that there was a... you know the wrestler The Rock?
I do,
yeah. The
wrestler
and film star. I think he had kind of some sort of nipple surgery because the... Some sort of a, this is all alleged, just because obviously we'll be sued to death. But, like, I think his use of certain muscle growth products may have led his nipples to become puffy.
Ah, I have heard of this before, and I actually know somebody who was a bit of a bodybuilder, weightlifter kind of a guy, and literally had breast reduction surgery.
Yeah.
Because of that.
I think it's a hormonal thing. Yeah. So that would be a worry.
Yeah.
The Rock would, like... The Rock could be a footballer now, but at a certain point he could not have been. And that is discriminatory.
Yeah. So essentially what we're saying is paper shirt's a bad idea. Painted players, a fantastic idea, one for the future. Not great for cold days, particularly if the nipples are...
What a day that will be when Arsene Wenger lifts the Premier League as manager of a Chelsea team covered entirely in body paint.
Yeah, with just weeping, bleeding nipples everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, something to look forward to.
Indeed.
This is the future that Nick Angelo has brought to us.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Nick. You've been a pal. All right. Well, look, we're going to leave it there. We've got Manchester United at the weekend. Gulp? Are we a little bit worried?
Yeah, gulp. I think it was gulp even before the Swansea game, really. At least we're not going there with sort of, you know, T-shirts printed saying 12, just done it, or whatever it would be.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see.
Thankful for small mercies right there.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, okay. Well, we'll discuss that game on the Arsecast on Friday. The Arsecast Extra will be back on Monday, as usual. It really kind of fucks up my week when we've got to do this on a Tuesday. I don't quite know what happens.
Like, I'm confused.
My equilibrium is all over the place. So thank you for listening. As always, we'll talk to you on the next one. So cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.